Welcome, Gamer. You're listening to GameStar Radio, home of the finest shoutcasters on the planet. Sit back and prepare for auditory ecstasy.
Gah! Warning, this broadcast may contain abusive language.
Now we're going over to the Dystopia interview. I didn't mention this at the beginning, so this is a big surprise for those of you listening, except for the fact that I advertised it on the website. I'm joined here by Fuzzy and Ted from Dystopia Mod.
Hello, how are you? My name is Teddy.
Good evening, I'm Fuzzy.
Hey, and Ted? Or are you both there together?
We're both here together.
Okay. Let's just start this off by telling us a little bit about your mod.
Our mod's called Dystopia. It's a cyberpunk modification of Half-Life 2. Work's been going on for about a year. We've had it doing prototyping on Half-Life 1. If I had to say it was most similar to any game, I would say it was Enemy Territory. We're using objective-based assault-style maps, but we have set it somewhat in the future, so it gives us a lot more leeway to do really cool stuff with implants and weapons and all the sort of unrealism stuff that we've always liked from games like Quake, but still set in a semi-realistic environment.
Would you mind just to explain to some of the listeners out there what exactly cyberpunk is?
Well, cyberpunk comes from a whole bunch of different sources that have really influenced it. People like William Gibson, authors like Gibson.
Okay, Dex?
Alright, you've got a good team running on the Dystopia mod. How big are the different parts of the team, like the art, the audio, the coding, etc.?
The different parts of the team tend to vary a fair bit. For example, in the art department, we've been through a lot of people, probably 20 different artists who come and go over the time, but just whoever's there is who's contributing. But our mapping team is a lot more solid, and even more solid than is our coding team. We have three coders. We've got three or four mappers at the moment with a few new prospects on the way at the moment. And our art team, as I said, anywhere from usually around a dozen people at any one time, but we get people just coming and going, you know.
And, you've been on Chatback before, but we actually talked to one of your coders before, LMF. You actually have a pretty professional mod team out there.
Luckily, thanks to Caliban, who's one of the people that have been with Dystopia right from the start. He works in a game design company making maps, and thusly we have a lot of his friends from work who are interested in the Dystopia project. They pretty much just like the idea. All the stuff we had in the design doc, they were pretty much sold on. So we've got a few professional people on the team, which has its ups and downs. I mean, these people are very busy people, but when they do put out some work, my gosh, it's amazing.
Yes, I've seen a couple of the screenshots you actually released a week ago? Yeah, released two screenshots.
Yeah, a lot of work's already gone into them because they were able to get underway with the Half-Life 1 mapping, so we sort of had a bit of a heads up on getting the maps underway before the SDK even came. So now that things are all coming together with the code, we're actually able to truly start building Dystopia. So, I mean, we've got our dedicated server up and running now, and we're starting to test features as we put them in, so it's like, it's all coming together now, and yeah.
And how is... Go DX?
Touching on the subject of the screenshots which were recently released, one of them was of a cyberspace map or area, I suppose you'd describe it as. This really caught my attention. So, Fuzzy, I think you're the main man behind this. So, maybe you could give us a kind of idea of what you're trying to achieve with the cyberspace area.
Actually, it was Teddy. Teddy all the way.
I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
Yeah, cyberspace is a concept we've taken. We were originally just going to have the 2D hacking thing like you see in a lot of other games, but we did, after reading a lot of cyberpunk books, you know, like Shadowrun sort of stuff, we came up with the idea of having a 3D cyber world. So that map you see there is one that I've made. We have a very crazy physics movement system that I've put in place, and basically the gameplay is that we have players can have a cyber deck implant which allows them then to go up to a jack point somewhere in the real world, which then teleports them into the cyberspace world where they can fly around and load programs and hack and attack systems which control things all throughout the maps. I mean, every sort of thing, anything from opening a door to activating a lift, security cameras, turrets, light grids, telephones, you know, you name it. There'll be tons of stuff that you can do in cyberspace to interact with the real world. So a lot of the objectives in Dystopia come from players having to get their hacker into the jack point to do the hacking and to open the door so the rest of the team can go through. So we're sort of forming a dual world with two sets of objectives to go, where, yeah, the hacking is really something very different from any other games we've seen, but we're trying to keep it really fast-paced and really crazy sort of movement, like in bunny hopping in Quake 1 gone mad.
And within this cyberspace world, will you be like attacking players within it, or will you just be in there by yourself and you won't be able to see anyone else?
No, there'll be both attacking and defending players in cyberspace. The defender will initially be securing the terminals that control the real-world items, and so he'll be actually running programs and launching them, shooting them at the terminal that will secure it and allow it to be secured by a password. And the attacker will attempt to get through him. They'll enter into combat where they'll be shooting programs at each other. The system works where you're able to load a certain number of programs into your CPU, and you also, the other measure that we've got in there is the memory. And so each program has a different sort of level of each. They'll load up their programs and be able to then instantly fire them back out at each other, be able to counter each other as well with programs that just counter, so a virus will be taken out by an antivirus, for instance. And so the players will enter combat, and then he'll have to hack into the terminal and then interface with the real-world object.
Also, what type of weapons are you looking at to feature within the game?
Our weapons are, we've got 12 primary weapons, and there's three for each of the classes. Basically we've got the standard shotgun and laser rifle for the light. The laser rifle is a sniping weapon where the beam is very prominent, so you have to be quite good with the laser rifle to hide the beam from the enemies, because if they see it, they'll duck and cover. The shotgun is very much like the Quake One shotty, very fast rate of fire. The light's weapons are mostly just to try and hurt the enemy, but probably not to kill them, because the classes above him, such as the medium and heavy, have much bigger firepower. For example, the medium has the assault rifle, which is, it just hammers. It's a bit like the Halo assault rifle, if anyone's played with that. High rate of fire, lots of bullets, but yeah, that's probably my favourite weapon, and I think it's the most deadly at the moment. Other weapon we have is the grenade launcher for the medium. And there's also a plasma rifle for the medium. Onto the heavy, the heavies get the absolute best weapons of all. The heavies have a four-pod rocket launcher with laser guiding, so you can fire off basically a swarm of four rockets which will chase to your laser, and it's a devastating effect if you can land that in amongst the people. The minigun we've got, we've really played up the physics on it. You can shoot, you know, cars down the road and that sort of thing. It sprays out so much firepower, but with enough spread on it that you have to get pretty close. And then the heavy being pretty slow, it'll be a pretty hard task. And then lastly, there's the lightning gun slash physics gun. It works a lot like the lightning gun from Quake 3, but also a cross between the physics gun from Half-Life 2. You can use it to hurt people. You really need to keep the beam on them for a while, because the damage does take a while to increase. Similarly, you can pick up physics objects, and yeah, you have to hold it. That can be used to set up roadblocks and whatnot. You know, you can move items around the world to try and stop vehicles getting through and that sort of thing. Also, with the use of a welding tool, which I've just coded up, we can weld all the vehicles together and make a solid roadblock across the road. It's really cool.
Both of you come from an RTCW background, among other things, so I'm sure you both know the glory and the joy that can be achieved from knifing another player during a game. Have you got any melee weapons set up for Dystopia?
Oh, we certainly do. We've got a sword that's going to be in for the medium class to be able to wield it, and the stuff that Ted's already been gun coding for that's pretty interesting. Let's just say that'll be a lot better than just a quite simple instant hit style chitty hack sword. It's actually got something that's got a real physics swing on it, like it's very nice. And yeah, sword combat will actually be down to a melee kind of style fighting that's with skills in it. It's nice. Yeah. I mean, it's stuff that we're working on. As you know, the Half-Life 2 engine, it's very network intensive when you start doing the cool stuff with the physics. So it's all down to testing at the moment, but yeah, it's pretty sweet. Yeah. The heavy weapon as well comes into melee. He might be big and slow, but up close you don't stand a chance if he gets onto you with a heavy fist. He can send players flying. That's probably the most damage you can ever pile on. So it's not the light stealthy guy that does the backstabbing and stuff.
The Source engine can be really server intensive with the physics. As we were talking, me and DX were actually reviewing CS Source before, and we noticed that whenever the physics come and actually play in the game, like with things exploding and shrapnel flying everywhere, it really takes a lot out of the server and your own system. And I was going through your forums earlier, and I noticed you're the first mod to actually. You were actually the first mod out on Half-Life 2 mod out there to have a actual mod server for your game. So have you actually noticed the physics intensiveness of the Source engine coming into play on your server?
We certainly have, and if you think the physics are bad, wait till you see the vehicles. They basically, when someone jumps in a vehicle, it adds 3 kilobytes to the server sent to every client, which is, multiplies for all the vehicles on the server. So needless to say, we've got a lot of code to fix before we can actually get vehicles in game. But yeah, for the physics, they really do take up a lot of bandwidth, because for it to work in multiplayer, you can't have any client-side prediction on the physics. They're completely done on the server, which means all the information needs to be sent up to the clients. We can't do much except for lower the number of physics objects in the map. Probably the best way to do this is to just use more larger physics objects, less small things, that take up this bandwidth, because it will take up just the same amount to have something large, but it will have to distribute them across the map and really select how many we use, unless Valve, of course, managed to patch the engine, fingers crossed.
You mentioned vehicles. What are you looking to actually have vehicles usable within your mod?
We are working on it. It wasn't in our original design, but from some of the testing that we've done on our dedicated server in the last, just over the weekend actually, we have noticed that it causes some major lag issues. So we do have one fellow from, his name's Cannon Fodder. He was big in the Half-Life 2 World website. He does a lot of tutorials and has released a lot of tools for Half-Life 2. He's doing our vehicles. He's going to look into doing some slimmed down code for the vehicles and see if we can get them running at a decent level. And only then will we actually be able to put them in game. Incidentally, we do have a few really cool car models, but it's all for naught if we can't use them. So
we've got a question in IRC from Crisis. Or a couple of questions, actually. Firstly, what are you doing to make it good for competition play? And secondly, will there be any ETTV technology? Or the equivalent of ETTV?
This is where I really come into my fore with this mod. This is the side of it that I really drive. Myself and we've just picked up Covert, who anybody that comes from the battlefield remember the stuff that he's done for his stats and various other things. But yeah, we're both coming at it from the side of we want to make it easy to administrate, easy to play in. Covert at the moment is working with the new server plug-in technology that Valve have released with the SDK to enable the Pugbot to be able to do everything, be able to give you a password, set up the game, allow the voting on the maps, everything. The demo will be recorded. Our dreams are huge and varied.
Me and Dex were actually talking to you guys a few weeks ago, and you mentioned you wanted to actually make the game extremely shotcaster friendly for competition play. How exactly is that going to work?
Well, initially, Half-Life 2 ships with a working Half-Life TV, with a few adjustments, but yeah, we have Half-Life TV, so that's, that's half the work already done. But basically we want to add just a lot to our administration. We're going to have an in-game server administration system. Covert's looking into all that sort of stuff because he's a godlike at that sort of thing. But we also want to have access for shoutcasters with a password where they will be able to spectate and free roam around the map. We had some, you know, a few fancy ideas that were throwing around in the early stages. It's a bit early now to be actually saying if they'll go in, but things like an actual visible model for the Shatcaster who's flying around, because we know how people love to ham it up when they're on camera. So we thought it'd be really cool to have a little flying thing for the Shatcaster. Obviously, it wouldn't clip or wouldn't push anyone around, but just something so people could know that they're on TV.
Yeah, I personally reckon that'll be absolutely hilarious because, well, one, apart from the fact that it may interfere with the game, but yeah, having actually seeing the Shoutcaster there and knowing that you are being watched and other people are hearing what you're doing and seeing what you're doing, if there's like a Half-Life 2 TV type of thing going for it.
The way that the camera technology already works within Source allows us to do some cool stuff with that. Ted did some awesome hacking to get the camera system working, so we're able to show multiple billboards with different things showing on them. So it'll even be possible, maybe in the Dreamland, to have the vision that the Shoutcaster is watching displayed in-game live on the billboard. It's all possible. That's the greatest thing about the technology that Valve has let us at.
You've already said that this mod's just going to be done when it's done, but where do you want to go with this mod? At the moment, it's set to be a multiplayer only, but are you looking to have a single-player component to go along with it later on?
No plans at this stage. I mean, we don't really play single-player games, and single-player games basically take a lot of resources, especially art-wise and level-wise. I mean, it's not very code-intensive, but you've got to make a lot of maps, and it takes a lot of time bug-testing those maps and whatnot. Basically, we'd only be able to do something like that if we were getting paid for it. So, you know, in our wildest dreams, if Dystopia gets popular and some publisher waves some money at us, sure, we'll take it.
You mentioned a bit about the objectives before. What about the size of the maps? Are they going to be the size of Battlefield maps? Are they going to be more like ET-sized maps or smaller, again, RTCW kind of sized maps?
They'll be probably a little bit larger than ET maps, probably about double the size, I'd say. But one thing that we'll be taking from the ET maps, different to the Battlefield maps, they won't be as open-ended. People won't be able to, you know, drive off to a far corner of the map where there's no action. We want to try and funnel the people into the places where the action will be. So there will be assault-style maps. There will be multiple objectives along the way, meaning that, you know, there'll be bottlenecks that each team needs to get to progress to the next area. So, yeah, they will be pretty big. If the vehicles work out all right, we'll certainly have some vehicle scenes, you know, places you can drive through a bit to get to objectives quicker and whatnot. But basically, yeah, I'd say double the size of ET maps would be a fair estimate.
Well, the ET maps are actually rather big, so, you'd really need vehicles to move around them, but double the size of an ET map would be close to the size of a Battlefield 1942 map. But does that
mean... Yeah, but Battlefield 1942 map's a big square, whereas the ET map sort of run along in... Because we're looking at is having to five objectives within our maps, as opposed to ET's sort of limit of like about three, maybe even less. So the string of the level that you'll play through might curl around in itself to be bigger, yeah, but it's... That's the kind of channeling and funneling that there'll be through the levels.
As you said, the ET maps actually flow. They start at one point and flow on to like a grand finale at right over the other end of the map, and it really does. It can really extend the gameplay. Are you looking for the rounds to be fairly of Dystopia to be fairly long online?
Not particularly. I mean, when it comes down to the map size, it does vary from map to map. For example, the maps that we have that we're currently under development, some of the urban ones are quite large, but, you know, they have a large outdoor scene accounting for vehicles, and then an indoor, like, you know, the inside of the lab, which is, you know, less size, of course. But, yeah, basically we don't want it to go for too long, probably about no more than 20 minutes for a round, which I think is pretty fair.
Are you looking to add any stealth functions to the game?
Oh yeah, I just finished coding that the other day actually, using the fancy Predator effects from the Source engine. I've coded a system where, depending on your movement, so the more you move, it builds up the amount that the shimmering effect comes up, and the more it refracts. And then if you stand still, it takes a while to actually tone down, and the refraction just slowly disappears until you're completely invisible, and I tell you, man, it looks sweet.
So you're using like a cloaking device type of thing?
That's right, that will be one of the implants. But to give you an idea, that implant does take up quite a lot of space, and so I think it's only available to the light class at the moment.
What are some of the other implants you're going to feature in the mod?
We already mentioned the cyber deck for hacking. We've got a few that we've just finished doing some development on. For example, the IFF, which is the Identify Friendly Foe. It basically draws our HUD information. It draws either a green or a red box around anyone that you can see on the screen, which tells you whether they're friend or enemy. If it's a friend, it tells you their name, their health, what implants they've got, their energy, you know, all that sort of information about them. That also plugs into another really cool implant we have called the TAC scanner, which is basically a radar. It'll show up when you fire at any enemies that are in range on your radar, and also if you have the IFF implant or if anyone else near you has the IFF implant, it'll show an icon for them, so you can basically do a scan and see where people are through walls and that sort of thing. And yeah, that also looks really cool.
So you're including a feature in which you can actually build upon implants.
Yeah, well, they'll tie in together. Most of the eye implants can all interact. You're just getting a better version of the implant, of the eye replacement, so a lot of those things can tie in together. Anything that really reacts with the HUD, you're able to like layer on top of each other.
And go, Dick.
One thing that I'm really interested in, and I'm sure quite a lot of other people will be interested in, is being able to make our own maps for this mod. When are you planning to release the tools to do that? Are you going to do it when it goes public beta, or wait till a full release?
I'd say it'll be ready probably. If we do a public beta, with most of the features in there, then certainly we'll release it. We don't want to release a public beta that's missing any of the core gameplay things. For example, we wouldn't release without Cyberspace, because releasing it later on would just change the game too much, and you know how that goes. But yeah, the tools are basically pretty easy. All that we need to release for you guys to be able to do your job is the FDG file for Hammer, so you've got a list of all our entities, and we'd be happy to share that with anyone that wants to make maps for us, for sure.
And a couple of more things, just a sec.
One more question from IRC, from Crisis again. Is there going to be trick jumping, like in Quake 3 and like in RTCW?
Yes, in the real world there is I've already coded in a lot more air movement to be more similar to Quake 3. We had bunny hopping in for a few test builds, but that was just for a laugh. We took that back out, but just to illustrate how good the air movement physics were. So we have allowed a lot more action. We've also toned down the gravity on the server a fair bit, because that makes the physics impacts a lot more sweeter, and also just makes the physics movement a bit. So it's about 80% gravity, and makes a great difference. But we do have some implants which affect movement. The best one would be the leg booster implants. If you have those implants, you can, instead of just pressing jump to jump, you can hold down your jump button and then charge up a jump, and then it'll give you a big jump to fly up in the air. You can use that to, climb up or to get on top of buildings and on top of cars, get over objectives. I've also coded in ledge grabbing, so that if you hit a ledge, you can actually, your weapon will disappear and your hands come out and you grab onto it. You can then either shimmy sideways, climb up onto the ledge, or do a kick jump off. And if you've got the leg boosters, again, you can do a really big kick jump off.
One question before I ask another one, which would mean two questions. Firstly, is there going to be a third-person viewpoint within the game, or is it just purely first-person?
It's going to be purely first-person. A lot of the stuff we've been messing around with, the sword fighting early on, it was putting us in sort of two minds, but that was the only thing we were sort of talking about. But even then, just having an external camera on a player, it opens you up to too many little silly exploits and things. You got to put too many balance and checks into it. So at the moment, we're just trying to stick towards a first-person view for everything, and just trying to work a sword fighting system that works with that.
I know what you're talking about. Actually, I started online gaming in Rainbow Six, and that featured a third-person view, and with one-shot kills, and you just go into a third-person while you're hiding somewhere, you just see someone from the third-person view run past, you could just easily go out and just shoot them in the back. And my second question was, the second thing I wanted to kind of bring up was the objectives within the game. What types of objectives are you actually looking at featuring?
Usually the final objectives for maps is either destroying something or hacking something. And so we try and focus on things where you have to try and get your hacker or the player with the cyber tech implant, that is, to the objective. And, you know, the tense kind of final fight while they have to do their tricky run through cyberspace, flying through the links and getting into the node and firing off their programs. But yeah, it can be anything from inserting a virus into a mainframe, blowing up a generator, blowing up a tower, all that sort of thing. A lot of the sub-objectives that we have in-game are a lot more fun. Many of them are controlled from cyberspace, for example, an elevator to get up into a building. If you go into cyberspace and you know you've managed to hack that node, you get control of the elevator, so your teammates jump in, you have a camera view which shows you inside the elevator, and you know move it up for him. But if the enemy hacker comes and gets you, he'll kill you and then you know move the elevator back down while your teammates are stuck in. But yeah, it's really limitless what we can do. There's not much code involved, thank God, because the Half-Life 2 engine allows for lots of inputs and outputs in maps, so you know they can pretty much, the mappers can set it all up themselves to do lots of crazy stuff.
So, how far can you actually take the Half-Life 2 engine?
It's definitely got its limits. It's got its definite strengths as well. A lot of it, it's very immature. I think as Valve keep on patching it, adding new features to it, I think it's going to really come along. But at the moment, it was really built to make that game. And I think the delays we've seen in TF2 really show that up. Like, for Valve to get another complete different style of game running on the engine does take a long time. Same with the Vampire Bloodlines game. It still takes a long time. The engine's there to be built upon. The base of it is really good, but it's a key to the future, really.
Yeah, I for one, I actually went out and got Vampire: The Masquerade Bloodlines, and like after playing Half-Life 2 and going over to that game, it felt entirely different. Even though it was the same engine, the graphics, the physics, everything in the game just felt completely different. How does the feel like? Playing it on your server, how does the feel of the game hold up against the like Half-Life 2 itself?
Well, I've managed to fix a lot of things but some significant things in the physics. We were getting a lot of collision errors and whatnot and teleporting when you jump on top of physics objects, but I've managed to fix that with a fair bit of the code. It's pretty good, provided your ping's okay. But yeah, because the physics is always going to be done server-side, if you have a high ping, the physics objects are just going to suck it.
Fair enough. Is there anything else you want to bring up?
I want to know all about your new ET Pro Shoutcast features, man.
Can I say something?
Yep, go, Bob. Just forgot to mention, Bob's in here helping us out tonight because in the absence
Hi,
of Sergeant Bourne.
Hello. Hey, Fuzzy and Teddy. Don't we love you guys? Hey, mate.
I hope so.
Mate, I've been listening to the... well, I do. Come over here and I'll show you. Anyway, I've been listening to all the features that you're adding into it. There's not a chance that you guys are going to make it too complex?
Hopefully not. I mean, we are prepared to lose any of the features that make the game... Anything that really isn't suiting the gameplay, we're just going to yank it out. But we have been working with the Half-Life 1 prototypes for a while, and in our experience, it works pretty well. Basically, the thing that sets our game apart from most other games is cyberspace and implants. And implants, we've all made pretty cool things, but not really dominating things, you know, in the game. Just all the cool additions that we've seen in any game that we've played, you know, thermoptic vision, you know, sound triangulators, you know, when a gunshot goes off, it gives you an icon on the HUD, all that sort of stuff. We're just adding them, but so that players can actually select them, and we'll have to select one over the other, you know, so they can actually make their own loadouts. But we feel so far that's been working pretty well. The cyberspace part is the big if component. because when the hacker is hacking, you know, when he's plugged in at a jack-in point, his body will be vulnerable in the real world. We are worried because of the pace of the gameplay that it's going to be too easy to kill him. So we're trying to make cyberspace a bit quicker for the hacking, and also looking at a few other options just to protect the hacker a bit. But provided we can find a good balance for that, there's no reason why our features can't work.
Yeah, exactly. No,
he's a pessimist, man. It's going to rock. It does work. It's built upon the features and stuff that we've loved from all these previous games. I can't see how it's not... Man, already just the stuff that we've been playing with a limited set of weapons and just base gameplay functionality, man, it's already great fun.
Yeah. No, it sounds like it's going to be friggin' awesome. The other thing that was concerned was 20-minute maps... I know from a few experiences of playing some like ET matches lately, just a 20-minute round was just a little bit painful. If I was designing something, I'd be aiming for average time of 10 minutes, maximum 15, with a possible time of 5, if you guys could work it in. But obviously, but with all the features of the game that you guys are talking about, that might not be possible. And obviously, you don't want to give up on that side of things by sacrificing too much of it. But as long as you guys got it on board that gameplay equals best, I think you guys are definitely gonna hit something nail on the head there for sure.
Yeah, well, the 20 minutes, that's no hard and fast limit. That's just an estimate at this stage. But, you know, testing is going to tell us what the time limit is. We're not going to tell it. So basically, we're just going to put everything in, you know, play it on our dedicated server right here. Whatever works best is what we're going to go with. So, yeah, definitely gameplay first. This is a game that we're aiming at the clan community, and we want to have it played, you know, in a competitive kind of environment, because that's the kind of people we like.
And
it's like... someone that makes a sword wants to see the sword used by someone that can use it really well. Like, I have the same theory going into this game. Like, my entire drive is to see the two best 8-player clans, or whatever we end up, 7, 8-player clans, the two best clans in the world playing against each other, man. That's what I want to witness and look back and go, yeah, that's... And I want to still have guest privileges on all the Sharecast servers, you see. It's a simple plan.
Yeah, nah. It sounds awesome. The only other thing would be base the hitboxes and the weapon skills on the RTCW. It's by far the better game out of the recent multiplayer games anyway, besides Quake. I love Quake, but Half-Life 2 and all their hitboxes, COD, it just doesn't work. It allows the noob to be skilled. So I don't know what you guys have decided on that side of things.
Yeah, well, the hitboxes in Half-Life 2 Engine are actually quite complex. There's a lot of hitboxes for every part of the body, and because of that, you know, whereas you'd have the big square around the player of the old Quake engine, that, you know, you could just aim pretty well on them, and that also helped with the netcode. You know, if we have to, we'll go to that, but I'm hoping Valve will be able to do something to help that. A lot of the effect in Counter-Strike Source that I've noticed is because of the client-side prediction on the effects. After coding the weapons, I've found out that it actually will fire the gun and render the effect on the client before it actually gets to the server. So what you see on your client where the bullet actually puffs may not be where it really hits on the server, unless there's blood sent from the server.
Okay, I just have one question from IRC. EJ's asking, is in-between rounds going to be auto-readied up, like with... RTCW and ET and all them, with the competition mods such as ET Pro, you actually have to type in /ready to ready up, or press F3 or something. Are you going to have a feature like that, or is within Dystopia, or is it just going to automatically do it?
Well, I definitely see that as something that is able to be set on a server side thing. Setting in functionality like that for clans is not a big issue. Like, and because we hold it as being something that we want to make sure that you guys are happy with how you play, I can't see any reason why we don't just put in an option so that whatever is best chosen is left on there. So.
And my other question is, how is hacking in the cyberspace thing going to actually take place? How are you actually going to do it physically?
The system that I've sort of prototyped at the moment, and it's still yet to go through a lot of testing, we're using the vGUI screen functionality of Half-Life 2. It gives you a 3D vGUI menu, similar to those seen in Doom 3. And basically, yeah, that's what the programs that, I mean, or the servers that you hack against, they'll appear as a screen, and it'll be password protected. You have to fly up to that The physics are kind of a cross between Descent and Escher's relativity. You know, it's a multi-axis, multi-directional sort of free-flying physics thing. You'll know when you play it anyway. But when you fire a program, it loads up a VGUI screen window which is attached to you. So as you fly, it stays relative to where you load it. It shows its loading screen when the screen comes up. You click on the screen, click on the target button, then you click on what you want it to attack. Then the screen will pretty much just fly off and interact. That's the prototype that I've got running at the moment. So if that is fun to play with, that's what will be in the final game.
So it's not like Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, if I can get the word out, where you just hold down like Control C and it, if your skill's high enough, it just breaks through.
No kind of skill or nothing like that. We're not having any kind of XP or skill system in the game. We want to just make it, you know, for clans, you know, action, action, action.
What you are able to do, though, is preload a set of programs so that they're sitting in front of your view, right, ready for firing. And then you can, as soon as you pick your target, you'll be able to put your crosshair over them and do a, like, it'd be Control 1 or Control 2 to fire out different programs. And they just fly straight off to the target that's underneath your crosshair. So, yeah, it's a if you can see what's happening up in front of you, because some of the links are transparent, so you can get a glimpse of what programs the other guy's got loaded, and you can preload your counters so that when you actually come into line of sight, you can start actually firing off at each other. You've already loaded up what you know you're going to need.
Okay, and is there anything else you want to add? Or have we covered just about anything?
I think we've covered just about everything, but yeah, keep an eye on our website. If there's any modelers out there listening, we do need a few more modelers to do props and weapons, because there's such an immense amount of models used in the Half-Life 2 engine. So yeah, any prospective modelers listening, other than that, we'll let you know when the game is ready to come out. Hopefully it won't be too long.
And I'm sure we'll speak to you well before then. Big shout out to Fuzz, Ted and the Dystopia mod teams for coming on the show and for making this amazing mod. We hope to see it soon, and unfortunately we won't be able to get to our Lord of the Rings Battle for Middle Earth review because we're 10 minutes over time, so it's now GameStar hour and 10. Big shout out to Bob for coming in here and hosting our stream
Thank
for
you,
us.
We love
and the
you.
Yeah, we love you too. And I think that's all the time we've got for you. This is Esky and DX saying goodnight.
See ya.
If you're looking for quality game commentary from professional and polished announcers, you're looking in the wrong place.
Go!
GameStar.
GameStar.
GameStar. Red Radio.